So I get on Facebook, and I don't spend a lot of time on there. My Facebook feed every day has at least got probably 9 or 10 different sponsored ads from, whether it be, you know, office investments, commercial investments, multifamily, mobile home park guys. I mean, like, there's so many ways. Everyone's talking about how you can make millions in real estate, and you can. You can make it many different ways, but pick one. Pick one and stick with it. You can duck and weave down the road. Like, once you master one, if you want to diversify a couple of years down the road, have at it. But master one first.
Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it. Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend, Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools and make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today. Hey, welcome back. I've got Kevin Bupp with me. Kevin, how are you doing today?
Todd, I'm doing awesome, man. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you being on the show. A little bit about Kevin, I'll let you kind of explain the whole deal. But right now, you are doing a lot with mobile homes. You guys are buying, I believe, kind of all over the country. Mm-hmm. And controlling the mobile home space. You've got at least one, if not more than one podcast. And I'll let you explain that. I know I listen to one of yours quite often. So I know that one. I believe you got at least one more. Kevin, why don't you talk to our listeners a little bit about what you got going on and why mobile homes?
Sure. Absolutely. Thanks, Todd. So I've been a full-time investor, Todd, since I was 19. I'm 39 now. And so I've been doing it most of my adult life. Started with single family, like a lot of folks, and also acquired a pretty significant size portfolio of apartment complexes back prior to recession 2008. And was down here in Florida. Florida was a very challenged market at that point in time. I'll leave it at that. And some tough times, some tough years ahead, following 2008. But I got introduced to mobile home parks. So we actually buy the entire communities. I got introduced to this niche, which I knew they were, right? I mean, being a real estate investor, you knew that other investors owned these. It was just a niche I never really spent any time in. I never had an interest. And met a guy that had been financing them for many years for a bank for like 30 years of his adult career, and retired and started buying communities here in Florida. And I had lunch with this guy for no other reason, just to meet new people, right? I was introduced to him, said, "Hey, I'm going to go meet Randy for lunch." And I didn't really care about his business. I just wanted to meet someone new that could, you know, expand my network, and maybe I could help him as well, right? It's all about meeting new people. And I left that 2-hour lunch meeting. Randy piqued my interest many different ways on this, you know, this unique niche of mobile home parks, that I kind of left that meeting saying, "Hey, I need to buy one of these and either prove or disprove how great or how bad, you know, it is." Right. And I did that. And so that was like five years ago. It took me about a year and a half to buy the first park after actually deciding that I was going to do it. You know, a lot of research, lots of underwriting deals, and, you know, lots of offers, and finally bought a park. And again, that was about 5 years ago, and that's all we focused on from that point forward. I'm a guy, I like focus. I don't like spreading myself thin and, you know, being the mobile home park guy, the multifamily guy, the retail guy, the office guy. I mean, some people can do that just fine. I work much better with blinders on and just trying to master one thing and invest my money passively in some of the other asset classes and not necessarily have to become an expert in them. So been doing mobile home parks for a number of years. Love it. Great returns, great investment opportunity. We are, you know, in many different states. Right now, we're in 8 different states. We're in the eastern half of the U.S., but we are expanding our reach to some of the western states. Basically, everything but California at this point. So, unfortunately, we don't have the luxury, Todd, like you, in the multifamily space, to choose just one or two markets and you know, purchase like you do with apartment complexes. There's not that many mobile home parks in the U.S., especially ones that we would consider buying. And so we have to expand our reach and be open to going into many different markets, which has worked quite well for us. So it's just part of our business. It's part of being in this business. And it's quite common when you see other operators that are in the space that are larger operators, they have very large footprints. Whereas in multifamily, you typically have a pretty condensed footprint. So that's a little bit about myself and who I am and why we like mobile home parks.
Well, that leads to a lot of questions.
sure it does.
First off, why, like that meeting, you had this 2-hour lunch meeting, you decided you're going to try it.
Yep.
What was said? What were the kind of the key points that were said that really piqued your interest?
There was a lot of them, but I'll give you a few that just really set my brain on fire. One was the big barrier to entry that exists in this space. And Randy went on to tell me that this asset class of mobile home parks, it's the only asset class that has a diminishing supply. You know, municipalities don't like them. They've got a bad stigma. And there's some really nice communities. There's some really rough ones. Just like apartment complexes, right? There's really rough ones and really nice ones. But unfortunately, mobile home parks got the bad rap. And municipalities don't like them. And so it's nearly impossible to get permitting and approval to build a new mobile home park. And a lot of the older communities that were built 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago, back when they were built, maybe it wasn't a desirable piece of property. You know, the city and the towns have grown around these properties. Now there's higher and better uses for them. And so lots of older communities get torn down and redeveloped into higher and better uses. And so this barrier to entry exists that if you buy a great community and a great market that has a high demand for affordable housing, I don't have to worry about a developer, for the most part, coming down the road and buying the 5-acre, 10-acre tract of land and building another community. So that was a big thing for me. I'm like, that's huge. Like you're isolated from your immediate competition for the most part. Now, if you went and bought a 10-acre tract of land in rural Alabama out in the middle of nowhere, you could probably get approval to build a mobile home park. So, but mostly in the major MSAs and the secondary markets that are associated with those, it's nearly impossible to do that. Some of the other key points that piqued my interest were the returns. And it's really hard to compare apples to apples when you say a mobile home park versus a multifamily property. And, you know, but he tried to give me a comparison of like a C class multifamily property and a mobile home parks don't go by A, B, C, D class. They go by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stars, 5 star being the nicest, 1 star being a trailer park that's run down and scary, stay away from it. And so he kind of compared a C class apartment to like a 2 to 2.5 star community, same type of demographic. And he said, if you compare side by side, apples to apples, for the most part, this doesn't always hold true, but you typically should expect a, you know, a 150 to 200 basis point yield premium, you know, as far as the returns are concerned. Obviously, all that is factored on if you buy right. You know, you can overpay right for things and mobile home parks just like you can and everything else. But for the most part, the returns are typically higher. A couple other things that he had mentioned to me was the management intensity is much less in mobile home parks because you, for the most part, just own the dirt. And so you're in charge, being the owner, you're in charge of the common areas, the infrastructure, so the water, sewer lines, and the roads. But as far as the homes themselves, they're typically owned by the homeowner that just rents this plot of land from you. And so if the AC goes bad or the roof goes bad or the plumbing goes bad, if anything like that happens, they're not calling you. And so the management intensity is much lower than that of a of a single family home rental or multifamily rental. And then one of the other big things that was just kind of like the deal sealer for me is that the turnover is much lower. And the reason being is that it's quite expensive to move these mobile homes. So for the most part, when these mobile homes make it into a community, they very rarely ever leave. And if they do leave, it means it's probably 30, 40 years down the road and they're going to the dump. But they typically don't get moved from one community to the next because it's very expensive to do. We're catering for the most part to a crowd that needs affordable housing, needs an affordable place to live. The average single wide trailer costs about $5,000 to move and set back up in another location. Typically, that demographic does not have $5,000 laying around. If they do, they're not going to spend it on moving their home. They're going to sell their home like you would a stick boat home. They're going to sell it to someone else that wants to live in that community, and they're going to move on. And so what happens there is, number one, you don't get a lot of turnover. If you do, you never actually have a gap in lot rent because that person's paying lot rent until they sell it to the next person.
Sure.
Yeah. So like lots of big benefits there. And one other one I'll mention that kind of goes along with that is, evictions are very minimal in this space when they own their own home. And the reason being is that it's probably the most valuable asset that they have. And in that same marketplace, you could take any of the markets that we own parks in. The average lot rent across the board of our portfolio is about $300 a month. Any of the markets that we're in, there is no cheaper place that a family can reside for $300 a month. And so if they can't figure out a way to pay that $300 a month payment, number one, they run the risk of losing that home. Because if they can't afford to move it, it becomes abandoned property. Number two, if they can't afford to pay that $300 a month, figure out a way to do it, they're basically going to be homeless at that point. There's no cheaper place. They can't move to an apartment. If they can't afford the $300 a month, they're not going to be able to afford $800 a month going somewhere else. And so we've only had one eviction over the last 5 years we've been doing this on a home to where the resident owned the actual home. And it was a very rare case to where this guy went MIA. He had been a resident for 8 years, and the guy just disappeared. We looked everywhere for months, hospitals, jails. Still don't know what happened to him. We finally had to go through the eviction process, and we got the home back, and then we turned around and sold it for a profit. That was the only time we ever evicted somebody that actually owned their own home. So the turnover is very, very minimal.
Wow. Some great benefits. What percentage of your tenants own their homes versus leasing them?
In our portfolio, so park by park, it varies. We have multiple parks where we don't own any homes. It's all tenant owned. And then we have a few parks where we have probably about half the homes that we own and the other half that the residents own. But across our entire portfolio, it's about 85% tenant owned versus 15% park owned. And the only reason is because when we buy these, if it was run that way prior to us taking it over, that's typically how the other owner operated it, to where they liked the rental business. So they liked having units that they owned. They felt it was much more profitable. In my mind, it's not. It's hard to create a homeowner mentality. You have a lot of turnover. You know, you turn your tenant base probably on average 50 or 60% of them every year, just like you would in an apartment. You know, people can get up and easily go to the next place. Yeah. So we try to shy away from that. We try to build more of a community, you have pride of ownership. Another way to really do that is with homeowners. And so we work very aggressively to convert even those rentals back to homeowner models.
That's what I was going to ask you. Are you, so the ones that are like 50-50, are you trying to convert them back or trying to make them?
Yeah, like the one that I'm thinking of that's 50-50, when we bought it, I guess 2.5 years ago, it was 100% rentals. The guy that developed it, he was an apartment developer, actually. He was a tax credit apartment developer and just happened to have this piece of land. He had a partnership in a mobile home manufacturing company, and so he could get the units for cost. And I think it was a toy project for him, and he built it. And all he knew was rentals. And so he put 70 mobile homes in this park, and it was basically a horizontal apartment complex. And he did a terrible job at running it for the, 12 or 13 years he owned it. We bought it, immediately started aggressively offering incentives to find those that actually truly had an interest in owning and start weeding out and doing non-renewals on leases as we sold units. So it's taken about 2.5 years, and we've gotten about 50% of the way there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, just try to continue that until you get close to 100%.
It takes a lot of time. Some areas it takes less than others. I'd say there's some markets probably where you could, you know, very expensive markets like this is in Huntsville, MSA, which it's not overly expensive to live there, even to rent apartments or homes or anything like that. You know, home prices, the median home price is like $130,000. And so It's not an overly expensive market. And so, it's a little bit more difficult there than it would be, let's say, like in Austin, Texas. If we bought a park in Austin to where the median home price is probably $300,000 now, we probably wouldn't have a difficult time whatsoever by getting folks to, you know, fork over $5,000 or $10,000 to where their monthly lot rent payment is going to be only be $500 a month. And, you know, to rent the next cheapest thing in town would be probably $2,500 a month. So it would probably convert a lot faster in a much more aggressively priced market than where that park's at in Alabama.
Are you offering like any type of seller financing, or are you helping finance these, or they got to buy it?
Yeah, we do. And, you know, the SAFE Act and Dodd-Frank put a lot of restrictions on being able to truly hold a note on properties. Sure. And so we do a modified, it's pretty common in our industry. It's called a rent credit program. It's very similar to like frequent flyer miles or, you know, like credit card points.
Like a rent to own.
Yeah, and it's not even a rent to own because the points aren't redeemable for cash. They, you know, they're not really building equity, but then they can use them at some point. Like there's a certain point value associated with that home, and so it's just a legal way around the Dodd-Frank. So we do it. It's not called a rent to own, but it essentially allows them to achieve the same thing at the end of the day. And so yes, we do creative financing options like that. Ideally. I know that once even a rent to own to me is a glorified rental, and our turnover is still high, you know, when they're doing the rent to own. So I know that my end goal is to get them to own that thing outright, free and clear. And so if I got 10,000 into it, I'll lose money. I'll take a $3,000 loss on the trailer, because I know that once they own that free and clear, chances of them going anywhere anytime soon is just not going to happen. And if they do, they're going to sell to someone else, and I'm never going to skip a beat on that lot rent. So our average tenancy in those, so we haven't owned these parks that long, but a number of our parks that we have, the average tenancy in there is like 15 plus years. I mean, it's crazy how long some of these residents have lived there. It's just like a neighborhood. I mean, it's just like when you move into a stick-built neighborhood. I mean, most folks that buy homes in neighborhoods, they typically raise their families there. They stay there. If anything, they might downsize or upgrade at some point and move on. But large number of that community stays intact for, you know, 10, 15, 20 years.
So you said, you know, you're kind of spread out. You're in, I think you said 8 different states.
Yeah, we're in 8 different states now, soon to be, based on my pipeline board, soon to be 10 here in like the next 2 months. Yeah.
Congrats.
Yeah. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. I mean, a lot of airplane time, but
yeah. Well, that's my question is, how do you manage these when you got 8 different states? Within those 8 different states, I'm assuming that's more than 8 locations, 8 cities.
Yeah.
So how do you manage them effectively and operate it so it's, you know,
actually, yeah, that's a great question. You know, first and foremost, every single one of our communities has a on-site, not necessarily always lives in the community, but someone that's within 5 or 10 minutes of the community, they have an on-site manager. So we have an office in each community, and we have a representative that oversees everything that happens there on a day-to-day basis. So rent collection, pay or quit notices being handed out, you know, vendor lineup, if we've got, you know, infrastructure issues, or we need the roads plowed, or anything that happens on a day-to-day basis. And so, and then in addition to that, we've got, you know, obviously infrastructure here at our, you know, corporate headquarters. You know, we got an operations director that essentially oversees those on-site managers. And we're at the point now, we actually have a regional guy as well. That's kind of a layer in between, but that's it. So we have boots on the ground, every community. We've got a lot of systems and processes in place. So we've got a very stout rental management software program that offers a lot of integrations. We use a lot of technology to make things easier, you know, virtual rent payment acceptance. You know, we give all of our managers a GoPro camera. This is one of our requirements on a monthly basis. Every manager is armed with a GoPro camera with a suction cup mount that goes to their car. Every manager in that community has to take once a month drive around video, both directions, through the community. Our regional and our director of operations reviews that. And we look for things like, you know, tenant infractions, like, you know, this tenant's got, you know, four cars, he should only have two. This guy, his siding's falling off his trailer, he needs to fix it. You know, this, you know, Sanford's son over here has five grills, he needs to get rid of four of them, he can keep one. Things like that. And so it allows us to keep an eye on them, and an eye on the on-site management without necessarily always having to travel. We do visit. Last week we just made a 6-week trip. We literally flew from state to state to state, literally one state for a day, next state, and visited a number of our properties.
6-day visit or 6-week? You said six weeks.
So over 6 days, we visited six states.
Okay.
Yeah, just jumped around and just to put our eyes on a number of our communities that we've seen via picture and video, but we hadn't seen, you know, in person for some of them as long as like 6 to 8 months. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that GoPro camera. I think I'm going to incorporate that in my
technology. Is amazing. You know, I mean, you can't always see everything. So here's what we do, Todd. If for some reason we feel like, because you can angle the camera sometimes, you can. So we have very specific instructions on how the manager needs to mount it, where they need to mount it, the angle it needs to be held on the car. But you can still, you know, there, you can't see every surface area of all these trailers. Like there's still things you miss with a video. You can see about 90% of it, but if we feel like there's something being hidden or there still is something not right as far as like the condition, then we'll go on Craigslist, literally go on Craigslist, hire someone in the gig section. It's the free section. People looking for like, you know, short-term jobs, like little projects, pay someone $100. Everyone's got a smartphone now. Everyone's got a smartphone. So everyone's got a video camera that takes really high resolution pictures and videos. And so we'll pay someone, normally it's like a college kid or just, you know, stay at home mom. We'll pay someone $100 to go give them very specific instructions to take still pictures as well as videos of things that we might have a concern about. Like we'll give them very specific instructions. We'll go seeker shop it and get them to do pictures. That way and see if there's anything being hidden from us.
Yeah.
So technology allows you to do so many things. Allows you to gain so many efficiencies that we didn't really have 20 years ago.
Yeah, for sure. Well, yeah, 20 years ago, you would have had to go on to that property every month and, you know, be there. So,
yep, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. I like that GoPro idea. I'm going to incorporate that for sure.
I'm assuming, not to interrupt, I'm assuming you probably have third-party management companies that oversee your assets.
Right.
So it's the same thing. You're just, now you're overseeing, I mean, you're still overseeing them, but allows you to, you watch the video. If you have concerns, you say, whoever your rep is at the company, you know, you sit down with them, say, hey, we need to spend 10 minutes and look at this video together. There's some concerns I have, you know, like, and put it in their face. Can't be denied right at that point in time. Yep. So
this is what's going on. Yeah. I like it. So one of the value adds is obviously converting these to, or at least I perceive value as converting these to ownership. What else, what other kind of value add are you looking at when you're looking at a mobile home park?
Yeah. So there's really only a couple types of value add that we look for. There's like the low hanging fruit and then the stuff that's way up in the tree, you need a ladder to get to, right? A little bit more effort to get to it. For us in this industry, it's still a very fragmented industry. Majority of the parks are still owned by mom and pops. We do have a lot of institutional players in the space, and they're also jumping into the space. Like I'm seeing more and more multifamily guys that can't find the yields they're looking for that are starting to like, you know, stick their toe in the water, which probably 3 years ago they'd have been like, you know, stick their nose up at the niche and I don't have an interest in this. Because it's a different business completely. I mean, there's some similarities, but it's surely a different business in a whole. You know, it's very common that when we buy a community, a lot of these are owned by older folks that have owned them for 30 years, sometimes 40 years, sometimes even longer than that. And what happens over that period of time, number one, a lot of them own them free and clear. Number two, they become close friends or, you know, acquaintances with the residents. And so they start feeling guilty about doing rent increases and things like that. A lot of times they don't even need to do them. They feel like, you know what, I own it free and clear. I don't even need to do a rent increase this year. I'll just give them a break and not worry about it. And so quite often we run into situations where we'll get into a community that's got market rents that are 10, 20, sometimes as high as like 50% below market, to where like that's low hanging fruit. I mean, that's a matter of a rent increase letter. Some states require you to give a, you know, a lot of notice. Some states you can only do it once a year. And so like there's some factors involved there, but at the end of the day, all that goes directly to the bottom line. So there's lots of value to be had there. Very low hanging fruit.
When, where else are they going to go? Because if they're paying 150 and market's 300. Yeah.
That's it. And, you know, we always try to have the nicest community and still maintain a lot rent below the market threshold. And so there's no, you know, and we don't try to overly aggressively, if we have something that's 50% below market, we're not going to bump it all at one time. You know, we're going to do it over a period of years, and we're going to give them complete transparency of here's when we, intend to get to this point. You know, it will give them an idea of what this year's rent increase is going to look like, what next year's, what 3 years down the road is going to look like. That way they have if they want to make the decision to move, they want to sell their home, they have plenty of time to do it. They got plenty of notice. But with that being said, we feel very confident after doing our market analysis that even once we get to that top line threshold of where we want the rent to be in a couple of years, we're still going to be below the competitors and still be the best option in that market. So the chances of anyone leaving because they're going somewhere else, like there's no financial gain. They're going to leave a nicer place to pay more at a less, premium venue. And so, and it costs $5,000 to move their home, you know, so it just doesn't happen. To get back to some of the other value add components with these mom and pops, some of them, and I call them mom and pops, there's some that are professional operators. They own two or three, you know, communities just like you. I mean, like they're small operators like us, right? Like us and like you, but they're not institutional. Right. And so there's still a lot of them that don't do a great job of operating the communities. Like there's lots of, operational inefficiencies. You know, they're running a lot of additional expenses through it. I'll give you an example. 3 years ago, we bought a community in Richmond, Virginia. This is quite a common occurrence, but this guy owned this thing for like 38 years, well-maintained, like definitely didn't spare anything, no deferred maintenance. It was an older community, but it was pristine. Gross income in that community, I think when we bought it was like, I don't know, 280. The guy literally, I think his NOI the year that we bought it was like $29,000. I mean, his expense ratio was ridiculous. It should have been about 40%. And it was, I think, over 90%, whatever that math comes out to be. And one of the primary reasons of it, it's crazy, is half the units in that park were park-owned rentals. And he had no screening process whatsoever. So what was happening for many, many years is he had on-site staff. He had a really hefty payroll of renovation crews. People would move in if they had money. If they could breathe and had money, they'd move in. They wouldn't pay. They'd get evicted. They'd have to go back in and renovate the trailer. The whole process. Sometimes these things were getting turned three times in a year. He was just getting killed. He wasn't making any money. He was losing money, and it was dragging this business down. We literally went in and put a screening process in place and literally fixed it in a matter of like 4 months. And within a year, we had the operational ratio down to like 44%. I mean, it's crazy. Things like that occur all the time with these older mom and pop operators. That was a pretty extreme case. I wouldn't say that they all run it that bad, but things like that can easily be fixed. Lots of heavy payroll as well. You'll find families that hire their cousins, their brothers, and their uncles, and no one's doing anything, but there's like $150,000 worth of annual payroll, and it should be like $30,000. So going in and cutting the fat out is a pretty easy way to make these things run better and add value. And then the hardest value to achieve in these communities is infilling, bringing in new homes. And so you'll see a lot of mobile home parks that, just give an example, it's a 100 space park, but it's only got 80 of the lots occupied with homes. For whatever reason, there's many different reasons why those other 20 lots either were never occupied or homes might've moved off of them. But either way, about the only way that you can guarantee that they're going to be filled with homes again is if you integrate a new home sales program into your community. So that's basically going out, buying brand new homes, brand new mobile homes, and bring them in on your own dime and putting them on those lots and then implementing a new home sales program inside the community. So that's capital intensive, a little bit more risk involved there. You got a longer deal cycle because I mean your money's being tied up for quite some time until you actually sell that home. And so that is the highest hanging fruit. We still do it in all of our communities, but I'll never buy a community if that's the only upside and we're paying a premium for the community. You know, because logistically it's challenging, it's very capital intensive, and there's risk associated with it. much more risk associated with that type of upside.
Do you have challenges with the municipalities too? If you've got vacants or you're trying to add more, do they give you challenges of trying to add more?
Yeah, some do. And for the most part, it's just because they don't understand how to interpret the code. You know, a lot of these parks were built before code was, before there was any kind of zoning code in those areas. And so they become essentially grandfathered in. Like the underlying zoning that's in place in a lot of these parks wouldn't support a mobile home park to be built today, but they get grandfathered in because they're licensed as mobile home parks. And so they're basically they're illegal grandfathered communities. And so they should still maintain all the rights that it had when it was originally built. So a lot of times, there's been a few times we've had to get attorneys involved with attorney or with local code enforcement officers and municipalities. One in North Carolina where it took about a year and a half actually of a legal battle to get them to understand that we had every right to bring homes in, you know, and fill these lots that had homes on at one point in the last 15 years. And, you know, but usually it's not that much of an uphill battle.
Yeah. I bought a park in South Carolina and, the municipality basically said, if you touch those homes, if you take them, cause we wanted to take them off the lot. There were some of them that were in just such disrepair that it made no sense. We wanted to take some of them off the lot and bring a new one in. And they said, if the second that goes off the lot, that's no longer.
Yeah. State. That's about the only time that would hold true is if the lot sizes, like the setbacks and, you know, if it's on like septic, let's say if like the septic or sewage system didn't meet current code, or if you're going to bring a bigger home in to where now the setbacks, you're going to have to conform with whatever the today's setback requirements are. And so that would be about the only reason why they would say you can't bring another home in. There's tons of case law in situations just like that. When I don't know the exact circumstances, but there's tons of case law to where community owners have won against municipalities when trying, you know, basically the municipality doesn't want the park. And so that's their way of essentially trying to shut it down or, you know, give it a slow death. And it's just not right. You know, it's just not right.
Yeah. And I never did find out, you know, somebody else bought it from me. Somebody else came in and offered three times what I paid for it.
So that works. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let them have the headache. Right. The best thing to do in that situation, is, you know, get involved, you know, become a member of whatever that state association has for manufactured housing. Sure. Most states have a manufactured housing association. Some are way more active than others. That's typically our first go-to is, you know, talk to them, find out who their legal counsel is, because that individual probably knows the manufactured house law of that state inside and out. That's what we did in North Carolina. We literally got that association's legal counsel to fight on our behalf. It's quite expensive, but like he knew every intricacy of the law and how it applied to mobile home parks. And so it basically just
makes sense.
Boom, you know, pounding them back to a reality and just it cost some money and took some time to do it.
Yeah. Cool. So how is the, you know, you're doing single families, multifamilies, those are very known, very comfortable, I think, for most people. Mobile homes, you know, I'm from the, you know, Minnesota, we don't have a lot of mobile home parks here and they're, you know, basically known as not being the sexiest. Let's just say that.
Some of them are. Hey, you should go drive around. There's more in Minnesota than what you think. There's actually a good number.
We do have our fair share, yeah. But they've got a stigma.
Yeah, sure.
So how do you talk to investors and is there apprehension from investors? Cause I believe you take investors for your deals. What's that conversation like? Is there maybe talk about first when you just decided to start, cause now you've got a track record. Now it's probably a lot easier, but when you just decided to start, what was that conversation like?
Yeah. Well, I tell you that, I've always been involved in affordable housing. So all the real estate I've done in the past, as far as single family and multifamily has always been in the, you know, called the C class range, right? C or C minus range. Like that's, and it's a very similar demographic. So like the people really aren't any different. They're the same folks. They're the hardworking blue collar folks that, you know, work at Walmart, work at Jiffy Lube, that work at a factory, work at a warehouse, you know, so it's the same demographic. It's just a different type of living. And so it never made me uncomfortable to look at parks. I mean, we bought our first park. It was in Atlanta. And I never once had a discomfort about the type of people we're going to be providing housing for. Because I understood them. I understand what they're looking for. They want a safe, clean, and quiet, affordable place to live and raise their families. Right? Yeah. It's pretty simple and straightforward. And as long as we provide that, then I felt very confident that we were going to be able to fill that park up. We bought a pretty much an empty park, and we filled it up. So the very first park we purchased was probably one of the riskiest investments that, at least in the park space, that we've done so far. And I did it for multiple reasons. We stole it, so we got a great deal. And I also wanted to have a great case study, because I knew that we were going to, if this worked out, we were going to have to raise capital at some point, and we're going to have to prove to investors, like, this works. I mean, this model works. So we used all our own money. We didn't raise capital for that first one. And it worked quite well. We still own the one today. It's a smaller community, but it's a home run. And so to answer your question about how we handle that conversation with investors, I'll tell you, for the most part, a lot of our investors, before they actually contact us to talk to us about this space, they've done their own homework. They've done a lot of their own homework, whether it's, reading online. We do have another podcast. I do a commercial real estate podcast where, I've talked about mobile home parks in the past, but we also have a dedicated mobile home park investing podcast. And so we do a lot of things in there. We talk about very intricate details of our business, the inner workings of it, the operation side, challenges. I mean, we're very transparent with challenges, how we've overcome them. We do case studies on deals that have run full cycle. We talk about things we're working on. So it allows a lot of our investors that have already kind of secret shopped us, like they should, just by doing a little bit of their background research, listening to the show, listen to hear if we actually know what we're talking about and why we like and why we're so excited and passionate about this niche. And so I can tell you that we very rarely ever have to educate our investors. By the time we're on the phone with them, do we have to educate them about why they should be interested in mobile home parks? They kind of already made that decision up. Now they're just looking for a good, solid operator to place their capital with. So I don't know, that's not really an answer to your question, but we don't have that conversation that often because they do their homework prior to actually contacting us. And so for the most part, they're vetting us as operators more than they're actually vetting the asset class itself, if that makes sense.
No, that makes sense. So by the time they get to you, they've already answered their questions. They're calling you for a reason. They want interested in the space.
And it's interesting. We didn't start the Mobile Home Park Investing podcast for that reason. And we realized like a year ago that a lot of investors were coming from that show or my other podcast. We were getting a lot of folks that were listeners. We're like, well, that makes sense. So they're kind of like doing their homework by listening to the show before they actually ever give us a call and show an interest in investing. And so we really started more leveraging it as a tool. And so proactively saying like, hey, if you want to know about what it is we do and why we love it so much, and you really want to understand our business and the inner workings of it, then go listen to either all the podcasts or go through and pick the ones that you feel are relevant to what your questions are. We probably covered it at least once, if not more than that. And in addition to that, we created like an educational program as well that we sold it last year, and we kind of pulled back on it because it just was taking a lot of our time, but we still have it. And it's literally it's the inner workings of our business. I mean, it's exactly how to do what we do. And so we started giving that to investors last year. We started to, hey, you can have full access to it. And so if you truly want to know what it is we do, and you maybe want to go do it yourself one day, or just better understand, the terminology, why we make some decisions that we make, have at it. There's like 40 hours of video that we had recorded and training. So we give that away as well to all of our investors. And it helps them better understand our business. We want them to be an educated investor and feel very comfortable with not just us, but also the asset class, why they're investing in mobile home parks.
No, that's good. Hey, I want to interrupt this episode real quick to talk to you about Nate Armstrong, our sponsor, Nate Armstrong. He's with homeinvest.com, and you want to get to know Nate. So go to homeinvest.com and just connect with Nate, talk to him, learn about his operation, what he's got going on. He's a turnkey provider, and it may not be right for you, but it could be the perfect fit. So it doesn't hurt. It's a free call, free consultation, just to figure out, what they do, what they have to offer. And worst case is you're going to meet a great person who's really well educated in real estate. He's done a ton of different real estate strategies, and probably he's going to teach you a little bit, even on a short conversation with him. So go to homeinvest.com and connect with Nate's company. you're definitely not going to be disappointed. It's worth it. So thanks. And we'll get back to our show. So I want to talk a little bit about the business and what you do with that. So how many units about are you guys controlling right now?
Yeah. So we've got 1100, just under 1100 that we own today. We just sold one recently up in Richmond. And then we've got 8 parks in contract right now. So we're about to double in size literally in the next, 3 to 4 months. We've got a couple closings coming in the next couple of weeks. And awesome. So we'll have, if everything closes, which one or two will probably fall apart, but more than likely we'll end up with probably about 2,000 here by the end of the year.
Cool. Yeah. So what advice would you give someone about operating a business successfully?
I think focus. I know it's so simple. We can talk about real estate. We can talk about any other types of small businesses or whatever, that person's, whatever avenue they're going to take to dive into business, right, and start their own, is focus. I mean, there's a million and one, more than that even, ways to make money, whether it be real estate or other types of businesses. And I think you just need to figure out who you are, what long-term goals you have, like why you even want to be an entrepreneur, why you want to be a business owner. Once you figure that, you need to figure that part out first, right? Because that's important, like the why are you doing this? Don't just get into business or don't go buy a franchise or become a real estate investor because it sounds cool or you want to own a business, but you don't know why you want to own that business, right? Have some of your life goals figured out and know that just is going to be the vehicle that helps you get there. But also understand your personality and what type of business best aligns with you and, your daily life, your family. Real estate for me, I really enjoy it. I enjoy the hunt for the deal. I love talking with owners. It's kind of funny. I like talking with bankers. I enjoy negotiating. I love just actually, to me, it's not even negotiating. I love building relationships with folks, whether it be an owner that we're going to buy from, whether it be other folks in the industry. I just really enjoy every aspect of this business. I like serving folks as well. And I feel like with our niche, with what I've always done in real estate, we've always served the low income demographic, folks that are looking for a clean, safe, and quiet place to live. And so for me, like that aligns with my personality and what I'm all about and what really fulfills me. So it makes it a little easier to grow a successful business when I'm actually passionate about the people I'm serving and the product that I'm putting out there. So that would be the advice, figure out who you are and why you're doing what you're doing or why you're going to start doing what you're doing, whatever niche you're going to go into, and then just focus on it then. Like, don't worry about all the other shiny objects that come your way. I mean, especially with like social media now, Todd. I mean, it's funny, I get on Facebook and I don't spend a lot of time on there. My Facebook feed every day has at least got probably 9 or 10 different sponsored ads from whether it be, office investments, commercial investments, multifamily, mobile home park guys. I mean, like there's so many ways everyone's talking about how you can make millions in real estate and you can make it many different ways, but pick one, pick one and stick with it. You can duck and weave down the road. Like once you master one, if you want to diversify a couple of years down the road, have at it, but master one first.
Well, and you can always invest some of your money you're making in the one and do another asset class.
That's the way to go. I mean, that's exactly what I do. I mean, we consider ourselves experts in mobile home parks, but I still like retail, even though Amazon's the big behemoth out there and there's concerns with, what that looks like in 10 years. I still like certain types of retail. I like certain types of office properties. Yeah. I like multifamily. I like self-storage. I'm not invested in all those, but I do have some passive investments in a few of those. And it's with operators that are, that's their focus, right? Like that's what they're experts at. That's all they do. Let them be the experts. It's all real estate. There's lots of similarities between all this stuff. But it takes a lot of time to master each and every one.
It would take you a lot of time and effort to try to successfully operate an industrial space.
Absolutely.
Your mobile home. I mean, you guys have a system. You'd have to start with a whole new system. It's a whole different business. Yes, it's real estate, but it's a whole new business.
Yeah. And there's only so many hours in the day, right? And I do know a few operators, a few very successful investors. I wouldn't say they're friends, but they're associates and they do well and they own, I know it's one guy, I'm not going to mention names, but he owns probably 2 or 3 self-storage facilities. He owns a couple mobile home parks, a couple multifamily, just bought an office building. And they're all so completely different from the next. And he does quite well with it. You know, I mean, he does really well. He's got a small team, but he seems to figure out the bandwidth aspect, and he seems to actually give the attention needed for each one to be successful, but, you know, to each his own. So I'm not saying that there's a right or wrong way, but focus is, for most people, focus should be the most important quality that they're looking for.
Cool. What's the biggest mistake you've made? How did you learn from it?
This might not bode too well with the listeners, and I know that you own single family as well, but probably not buying multifamily or, you know, commercial real estate sooner. Really spending too much time focusing on the smaller stuff, which it's funny when you look back, it takes equal amount, if not more energy, to build a big portfolio of smaller type properties. The types of sellers you deal with are not as professional. Banking relationships aren't nearly as professional. I mean, everything about it, there's lots of challenges that not that they don't exist in commercial or multifamily, but you could scale a lot faster, and it makes it, at the end of the day, it makes it a little bit more worth the effort, energy, the time that you put into it. So it would have been, I wish someone would have introduced me into commercial real estate in general. It doesn't matter if it's multifamily or mobile home parks, but commercial real estate in general, I wish I would have spent all my energy when I was in my early 20s focusing on that versus going out and buying another couple single family homes, right? It's just, I think I would be a lot further ahead now, even today, if I would have made that switch way back then.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you. I'm right there with you. I focused way too much, and I've talked about it a lot on the show. I focused way too much on flipping homes and, you know, buying a bunch of single families, and just like, you know, you got 50 single family houses or 100, you can do a lot more with 10 mobile home parks or 10 multifamily buildings or, you know, it just makes way more sense. So
absolutely.
Not that it's bad to have a couple and to get your feet wet that way. But eventually, if you do want to scale and you do want to make it a true business, going the commercial space quicker.
Yeah, absolutely. So everyone that's listening, I don't know who your listener profile is, Todd, but I mean, if you're just dabbling and trying to figure out which path you're going to take, then you should spend a lot of time listening to Todd and on his multifamily stuff and just really follow that route. I mean, not that you can't buy a few single family homes, get your feet wet, but because you definitely will learn from it, right? It's an easy way to get you'll stick your toe in the water, but quickly divert your focus. If you want to grow a larger business, if you just want to be the guy that buys one investment property a year and you're a high earner and you just don't really care otherwise, and you just want one investment property maybe to offset some of your income and go buy a single family, you know, buy a turnkey single family home, you know, from a provider that already has it rehabbed. You don't want to get involved in that business. You just want to own some real estate. Maybe do that. Or in fact, even for that guy, I would suggest you be a limited partner in a larger commercial deal than actually be buying turnkey properties, which that's another topic. I'm not going to go there, but hopefully you don't have a turnkey business, Todd, do you?
I don't know.
Okay,
I don't.
Good. I don't want to bash it.
So for someone trying to get to the next level, get to where you're at and beyond, what does it take? Couple like key things that you think it takes to get there.
A team. Team's a big one. I know a lot of people, and we were just talking about this before the show, Todd. I know that it's primarily you. I don't know what your team looks like, but it sounds like you don't have other principals in your company, which it's to each his own. I actually enjoy having other partners. Obviously, there's been challenges over the years with other partnerships I've been in. Most have gone really well. I enjoy actually having partners that have complementary skill sets, which is they're part of the team. There's other folks that are part of our team as well. And so I think that, you know, the team aspect is so very important. Don't think that you're going to be one man on an island and be able to do it all. You can to a certain point, but everyone's only got 24 hours in the day. Right. And, if you really value the quality of life, then you'll very quickly start working to put together a stout team that can offset some of the load that you're going to face, especially if you want to build a large business. You know, education is a big one, you know, and that doesn't have to come from the form of boot camps or books or, you know, we've got podcasts now, which didn't exist 15 years ago, which are chock full of just tons of great information. But even going to, you know, now I don't know how many meetups there are across the country, you know, there's multifamily meetups left and right. You know, get out there. You don't spend a lot of money even doing it. You'll rub elbows with folks like you, like me. If you want to be a multifamily guy and you live in the Minnesota area, go find out where Todd hangs out when he goes to real estate investment club meetings, or go rub elbows with guys like you. And if you want to be a mobile home park guy, come down to Florida, rub elbows with me, but get around other folks that are doing what you want to be doing. And find out how, not just get around them, but find out how you can add value to them. I think that's the biggest part of that. Don't just go asking, you know, like you want to take. Go into it initially with, how can I bring value to this guy's business? Because you're busy, I'm busy. Everyone wants to get into becoming an investor. But I'm not, it's just, I only got so many hours in the day. My family's important. My team's important. I'm not going to make time for someone that can't bring value to our business. It's not in the cards. And I like helping people, but you got to be able to help me as well. So figure out how you can help those individuals and, get to know them and rub the elbows. Those are two of the biggest things I would say, team, and surround yourself with others that are doing what you want to do.
Yeah. Add, I like the add value. And the other thing is go to them. I get people that email me, they just send an email about wanting to meet with me, and they want me to drive out to, Wayzata, which is, an hour away from me, all the way across the Twin Cities. It's like, well, wait a second.
Yeah.
I don't even know what you can bring to me. Yeah. Not that that's the only thing I'm in for, but it's like, what's this conversation going to be about? Mm-hmm. And you want me to drive an hour to you? Like, the least you can do at least is come to me.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And so that's absolutely. What I agree. When I contact people, because I reach out to people all the time that are where I want to eventually go, and it's, hey, I'll come over to your side of Twin Cities and meet with you at your convenience. And I think that's really important to try to add that as much to them as you possibly can.
Sure. Well. Don't inconvenience the guy that you're trying to get, or guy or gal that you're trying to gather information from. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're getting a little long, and I usually talk a lot more about the business stuff, but I was very intrigued by the mobile home, kind of what you're doing. So I got a little off topic of what I normally
do. No problem.
We're going to kind of wrap it up here. So last question before we wrap up is, what are your three pillars of wealth creation?
I didn't know that one was coming. That's a good one. Three pillars of wealth creation. I mean, I probably just talked about two of them, is team. That's critically important. Surrounding yourself with others that are smart, so like a little bit different, but surrounding yourself with others that are smarter than you. And that could be part of your team. That could be other mentors that are in your space that you want to excel at. Like, there's plenty of folks that are way larger than we are in the mobile home park space. I attend all the industry events. Try to surround myself with them as much as possible and get to know who they are and what they're doing and how I can give them value, but also learn from them as well. Yeah. Third pillar I would say would be continue education. I mean, never stop learning at all. And it could go in line with going to industry events, listening to podcasts, listening to audiobooks, reading, physical books, attending seminars and boot camps. I always get a laugh. I always get a laugh by folks that I get on BiggerPockets every once in a while. I see people get involved in threads that bash, seminars and boot camps. Like, don't spend the money on that because, you can learn it all here. You can learn a lot on BiggerPockets. You can learn a lot by going to meetups, but, at some point you're going to have to spend some money. Like, if you think you're going to learn everything and build this $500 million portfolio without actually spending some money on education, it doesn't have to be a boot camp, but just know that you need to continually get involved in education and take, keep absorbing more and more on a regular basis. And it comes in many different forms, but I don't know if I had time to think about that. Those would be the top three, but those are the top three, Todd. I mean, that come immediately to my mind when you ask me that question. So
that's what I want. I want the ones that come to your head.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Well, Kevin, I appreciate it. Appreciate you coming on the show and the time you spent. How can people get in touch with you? How can they learn about your podcasts and reach out to you?
Yeah, so I've got two podcasts. One is called Real Estate Investing for Cash Flow. The other one's called the Mobile Home Park Investing Podcast. Both can be found on iTunes or Stitcher, and I think Google Play, SoundCloud, a bunch of other places now. But my main website's probably the best way to reach me. And if you want to learn about me as a person, and you can listen to my shows there as well, it's kevinbupp.com. And if you want to learn about our company and kind of what it is we do here in the mobile home park space, our investment arm is called Sunrise Capital Investors, and the website is simply sunrisecapitalinvestors.com.
Awesome.
And I can be reached through any one of those different websites. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Kevin, I appreciate it. Have a fantastic rest of the day.
Yeah, thanks, Todd. It's been a lot of fun. I appreciate you bringing me on, and hopefully I was able to bring some value to your listeners.
Oh, absolutely.
You take care, bud.
You too. A special thanks to Kevin Bupp for joining us today. Appreciate him being on the show. A few things I took from this episode. First of all, understand the business and how it fits into your life. Make sure it fits into your life well and understand how that works. The other thing, and we hear this over and over, but it's extremely important, build a good team around you. No matter what you're doing, make sure you've got a good, solid team. And that doesn't have to be partners. It can be partners, but it also needs to be employees, subcontractors, and just everybody around needs to be a good, powerful team. Don't try to skimp out. Don't try to be cheap. And then the last thing is education. He talks about education, talks about networking, talks about adding value to other people. Just always be learning, always be growing, and always be challenging yourself in that aspect. So again, appreciate Kevin for joining us. Reach out to him, the kevinbupp.com, and we'll put everything else in the show notes. So appreciate you listening. Go on to our Facebook page. Say hi to us on Facebook, Pillars of Wealth Creation Facebook page, and let us know how you're doing, how we're doing. If you got any questions or just what you want to talk about, definitely reach out to us there. We also are on YouTube, so you can check us out on YouTube. You can make comments on YouTube. And we definitely appreciate your feedback. So if you haven't already, go on to iTunes, give us a rating review. 5-star, of course, would be definitely great. But ratings and reviews help us grow. So help us to do that. Go on to iTunes if you can and give us a rating review. I'm Todd Dexheimer. I'm signing out. Make every day Saturday. Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it. Episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars. To claim your free course today.